This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662. Or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. And this is actually one of my favorite times of the week because I get to hold forth with my eminent colleague, Layla Mudin, in regard to questions that you send us via radioprogram@AOL.com. You never know what's in the inbox.
Yes.
It's always, always interesting and challenging.
Yes.
Layla Mudin, of course, Hoffman Center nutritionist, registered dietitian with a master's degree in the field of nutrition and extensive experience answering precisely these types of questions for our patients. And with, of course, her own blog and her own podcast at drhoffman.com, which frequently gets a lot more hits than mine.
You're kidding.
Yeah, we'll have to do something about that. Could you kind of...
You have to stop posting me on your Facebook.
That's right. Keep it... That's right. That's what I do. That's what I do. And unbeknownst to you, and it ends up, you know, scoring a lot of hits. So always good topics. All right. So just starting today's broadcast, you know, this is right around the time, you know, this time of year is around the time of my birthday. Yeah. There's some... Well, I don't know. It's sort of good news, bad news scenario for my birthday because recently I turned the sage advanced age of 64. Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Right. You know, and when I get older, losing my hair, which that's obviously not happening to you.
Right. So you know, when I first got the Beatles White Album, you know, and I heard that song, I thought, oh my goodness, what an advanced age that is going to be, and what kind of condition am I going to be in? And I guess I don't know, 64 is the new 40 or something.
That's right.
Because you know, I'm not quite yet in my dotage. Feeling pretty good. But there's some sobering news about longevity, according to a new study. And it's actually a highly controversial study. And this was featured in a headline in the New York Times. What's the longest humans can live? 115 years, new study says. There's a researcher, who, is, named Jan Vig. And Dr. Vig, who is an expert on aging at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine.
Your alma mater.
My alma mater, which is, you know, I mean, it's not like he's from the University of Podunk. you know, yeah, it's pretty prestigious with, you know, with deference to those of you who are from Podunk. You know, this is a pretty prestigious research paper. They published the evidence for this pessimistic prediction in the journal Nature, which is actually one of the foremost scientific journals in the world. So this has actually created a bit of a firestorm of reaction because many people applaud this because what they're saying here is that in spite of our best efforts to extend life, there really is a limit, you know, which would give me, I guess, I have only another 51 years to go.
Wow.
You know, so that's a little
bit.
That's
amazing.
Kind of, my days are numbered, according to this. That this is the maximum thing. And they base this on statistics. And wherein lies the problem, I think. Because, interestingly, there certainly has been a change in longevity. I mean, you would have to say that the average person lived on average to the age of 50, although there were a lot of octogenarians, nonagenarians, even centenarians, in the 1800s, say, you know. But on average, the human life expectancy has increased. So one might expect that incrementally it's going to go up. It'll be 115, 125, 150, 165, you know, and on and on. But what they're saying is in an analysis of the statistics, there are increases, but the increases are slowing down and they're sort of reaching a limit. And the limit appears to be 115, although Jean Calment, the oldest living person in the world, who died in 1997, was 122.
Wow.
She set a record for human longevity.
Wow.
Now, there's a picture of her at 122 in this article, and one may not necessarily envy her predicament, because...
We should all hope to look that good at 122.
I mean, it doesn't look so great. She was blind, she was deaf, and she was, you know, pretty debilitated. So, in this article, they do state something interesting, which is, do you know what this is an interesting factoid. The fastest growing group among, women, demographically is among 102 year olds.
Okay.
Really? Yes. So it's not among 70-year-olds, not among 80-year-olds, not among 90-year-olds. It's among 102-year-olds. However, that is still a rarefied group, but it is the fastest growing group. So more and more people are becoming centenarians. And by, you know, 2050, there'll be a whole lot of centenarians.
Maybe I'll get there. That's 50 years for me.
That's right. So yeah, you just hit midlife mark. But what they're saying in this article, though, is that, they believe that there's just a limit to longevity. Now, you know, I looked at this article. I actually read the original article. And what they're saying here is that aging is inevitable. There's an accumulation of damage to DNA, which the body seeks to repair and does so with great success, mostly. But eventually... That process, like the process of entropy in the universe, whereby the universe, you know, cools down and becomes more chaotic by the, you know, and eventually will die in several trillion years.
Mm-hmm.
So too, the human body will become disorganized and broken down through these random events and inefficiencies, which will overwhelm the body's repair processes. So what I say in relationship to that is that, two things. One is, well, let's say that the limit is 115.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty advanced age, and usually people, you know, beyond the age of about, 90 are not feeling so great. So I think the object would be, even if indeed this study is true, is to what's called square off the aging curve, which means you do very well, and then you kind of drop off and, you know, leave your body, you know,
I mean, if you're going to be debilitated those last 15 or 20 years.
Right. Or as somebody, I was at a memorial service the other day, and somebody referred to the deceased's death as their transition. Their transition. That's a kind of euphemism for passing on to another, whatever, state.
Right.
Okay. But anyway, so that's one point, is that we want to, you know, that doesn't argue for the futility of efforts to enhance or combat aging. But I think there may be some real quantum advances in this. This article doesn't take into account the possibility that we may in some way unlock the genetic code or develop some very, very futuristic high-tech intervention that we can't even envision now that may, help the body's repair system to work better or, protect the DNA.
Well, in lengthening our telomeres is probably just then the tip of the iceberg.
That's one mechanism. We know that we can manipulate the telomeres through, for example, caloric restriction. We also believe that sirtuins do that, like resveratrol, but also new research with nicotinamide riboside.
Yes.
But there are many nutrients that seem to impact the telomere length, which also controls the unraveling or deterioration of the DNA template, which is the coding for all our proteins.
Right.
So, you know, I take this article with a grain of salt. I think that it's very, you know, scholarly article, but it may be an article that is mired in a current view of our lifespan from the technology standpoint, that we, given present technology, even with, you know, organ replacement and, you know, we can regrow organs and stem cells, mm-hmm. all these things, this, you know, is an article that does not take into account what we can't yet take into account, which are developments that are unforeseen
yeah.
in terms of science and medicine. So one hopes that 50 years hence, by the time, wow. you know, those of us who reach 115 and are desirous of living longer, who knows, we may not want to, that there may be, you know, solutions and technology at our disposal.
It cannot, however, include cloning, because that's cheating.
That is a form of immortality, too, is that, you know, we may be able
to... But you're not you.
That's true.
Arguably.
Whatever. Arguably, you are genetically identical, but we know that identical twins are a little different. They're a little different.
They can be so different that they don't even look alike
yeah.
once you learn their personalities.
Yeah. And that has to do with what's called epigenetics, which means the molding or shaping of the DNA template. So, you know, mini me, you know,
yeah.
like in Dr. Evil's, clone. You know, that's one way, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about just, you know, extending human lifespan. But anyway, this is a great, and an important scientific argument, but recently, weighed in with a certain degree of skepticism in the journal Nature. So I'll talk about that more on, some of my broadcasts. All right, more practical questions.
Yeah. Well, actually, Dr. Hoffman, I've got a really nice comment about one of your articles in the newsletter.
Oh, good.
From a while ago. This is from Carolyn. I was very interested to read your article about salt.
Yeah.
Carolyn is an accredited Tai Chi teacher.
Okay.
And she says, for over 20 years now, I've been teaching balance classes to the 60-plus group based on simple Tai Chi movements. For about eight or seven or eight years ago, I read a study in Germany on the elderly and salt intake. They found that this group was trying to avoid salt as much as possible due to hypertension, etc.
And due to a very, very aggressive public health campaign.
Yes. And as a result, they were starting to lose their balance quite rapidly.
Sure.
The outcome of the study was that they were recommending older adults to include some salt in their diet.
Yes.
But only sea salt. When they added salt back into their diets, their balance also improved.
Yep. Okay. And
yeah.
let me comment on that because
yeah.
there's also a story recently that I reported on where, you know, there are a lot of people with hypertension in this country, and so the temptation is to treat them and treat them aggressively. And sometimes they have risks of they've had a stroke or they have, carotid artery blockage, or they have a heart condition where they really want to aggressively manage blood pressure so as to prevent future problems. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they use so much medication that the people's blood pressure is low. And what they discovered in these studies is that if you lower blood pressure somewhat, you'll get a reduction in risk. Okay, we know that, and that makes sense. If you lower it too much, you will get an increase in risk. So there's what's called a U-shaped curve of risk, mm-hmm. that you lower risk, but then the risk goes up. So say you get somebody's blood pressure, you know, like 100 over 60.
Yeah.
An older person with less flexible blood vessels, they won't get enough blood to their brain. They may feel dizzy, woozy, and fall, and that could be catastrophic. Or they may even have more heart attacks or strokes at a low blood pressure.
Wow.
So that's kind of related to that story of inadequate salt in older people. And older people have stiffer arteries, and so they have what's called labile blood pressure. It's either too high or too low, and sometimes it's not in the right zone enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a useful observation. You know, the article on salt, if you go back to it, I did write, by the way, this is a big scientific controversy, because some people really insist that we could reduce heart attacks and strokes dramatically worldwide by having everybody, you know, reduce their sodium intake. And certainly we have too many processed foods. It's hard to separate the effects of the processed foods from
exactly.
the sodium it contains.
Yes.
So, yeah, you know, if you have less KFC or less pizza,
right.
maybe you'll be healthier, but is it about the sodium?
Right. yeah.
You know, so the other thing is that the body, when the blood sodium goes down too low, there's a counter-regulatory effect. The hormones that are designed to raise blood pressure kick in to raise your blood pressure,
yeah.
and you can get a paradoxical increase in your blood pressure because the body isn't getting enough sodium.
Angiotensin.
Yeah, angiotensin and these other regulatory hormones. So that's what that article said. Also a pro-inflammatory effect. That very low sodium was pro-inflammatory through some complex pathways that get invoked.
And then there are the dangers of hyponatremia.
Right, that too, which is, you know, which is actually a good illustration of hyponatremia is what happens to a marathon runner who imprudently is thirsty while running and has had water bottle after water bottle after water bottle without electrolytes. And they sweat, it's a hot day, and they get just water replacement, not electrolyte replacement. Their blood sodium can go way down. A normal blood sodium is 135 to 145. If your blood sodium goes down to like 122, you can literally get brain swelling and you can die. And but the first symptom is wobbly legs. You get really wobbly legs with hyponatremia.
So that's not just something that happens at happy hour, wobbly legs.
Yeah, well, you could actually, during a... well, you know, you can alleviate that by putting some salt around the rim of your tequila,
the margarita glass. Sure.
Yeah, that's maybe why. It still won't prevent you from falling down, though.
Right.
If you have a few of those, you're likely to wobble anyway.
Yeah. Well, Carolyn, thank you for your very nice comment, Tai Chi teacher. Wow. Okay. So we've got a question here from Charlie, and it's about melatonin. Dear Dr. Hoffman, Consumer Labs highlighted a UK research study on melatonin, and the result of this study was a significant risk of fractures. What is your take?
Okay. So, first of all, Consumer Labs I take with a grain of salt.
Yes.
If you'll excuse the expression, because Consumer Labs I think they do some good. I think their testing methodology may be right sometimes, wrong other times. I've seen them be wrong about their comments about supplements. I also have some concerns about their business model, it's a little bit in that direction. There's a potential for undue influence on the outcome of their evaluations. So they're not entirely independent shall we say, the potential for conflict. I'm not sure if there's always conflict, but anyway, so that's, I think I like some of their commentaries. I find them useful, but at other times I'm baffled by their conclusions. So this is something different. This is not a rating of vitamins. This is a general comment on melatonin. And I have here, thanks to you, you did a little research on this. Melatonin for insomnia tried to increase fracture risk. So in this study, they looked at melatonin and Zolpidem. Zolpidem is brand name in the United States is Ambien, which is a powerful drug that can make people feel hungover, and then that increases the risk for fall. It's well known as one of the drugs that creates a risk factor for falls in the elderly, because the elderly don't metabolize things as well, and the stuff accumulates, doesn't go out of the system, so they wake up. You know, they have a lot of insomnia, and then they take this, maybe it doesn't get out of their system, and then they stumble and fall. Maybe, you know, also a lot of older men, some women have the need to go to the bathroom. They're under the influence of a benzodiazepine.
Yeah.
Actually, these are not benzodiazepines, but they have similar effects. You know, they fall down, they break something, they fracture. So melatonin, for some reason, is lumped together with these in this study. What they said was that there was a higher risk of falls in people who took melatonin. But here's the interesting part. They say, however, the risk was only increased for melatonin when patients had received at least three prescriptions.
Oh.
Three prescriptions of what? Other drugs? I'm not even sure.
Yeah, because that doesn't make sense. How do they know what's the effect of melatonin?
Melatonin, yeah. So what I'm thinking is that, I've taken a lot of melatonin. Melatonin, even when we give it at high doses for cancer, it doesn't make people feel drowsy or dizzy.
No.
Rarely some people will feel a little fuzzy the next morning. For some reason, they're very sensitive. They feel a little hungover, but they don't generally feel dizzy or fall down.
They don't allow 8 hours in front of them when they take melatonin. The proper time to take melatonin is about an hour before bedtime.
Yeah.
And you need to make sure there's 8 hours in front of that for you to sleep, even if you don't normally sleep 8 hours.
Right.
The time not to take melatonin is at 2 a.m,
right,
as I did once many years ago, and
right,
I had to get up at 6
right,
to come here, and I felt like a lumbering elephant.
Yeah, so it
felt like I was in ether.
Yeah, but it just increased your sleep cycle. It didn't make you feel dizzy or weak.
No. I'm not elderly yet. I have another 50 years to go before I hit my 102.
right. So I don't know. Is that answering his question? Do you have something to say about that?
We know that melatonin.
What I thought was that somehow melatonin had this unforeseen effect of thinning the bones.
Mm-hmm.
I thought
which
that's
is not
what
the case.
Which is not the case.
No, which is not the case at all.
In fact, maybe it has a bone enhancing effect. According
it does.
To what,
yeah. It does. Melatonin has the ability to regulate bone metabolism, enhances bone formation, promoting osseointegration of dental plant and cell tissue protection. Melatonin can actually be used as a novel mode of therapy for augmenting bone mass in bone disease.
Are you saying this off the top of your head?
Yeah, no, I'm reading this from a study.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
from the International Journal of Molecular Sciences. This is their conclusion.
Right.
So
what we're saying is that, first of all, melatonin doesn't thin the bones. There are many drugs that thin the bones.
Yes.
For example, the acid-blocking drugs and steroids certainly do that.
A poor diet will thin your bones.
Yeah, diuretics may sometimes do that. Is melatonin responsible for these fractures? I really don't think so. I think this is an example of
maybe a headline. A
headline-grabbing approach.
Yeah, a headline.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what did you call that? Clickbait journalism?
Thank you. Yes.
Clickbait journalism. Very good. So, Charlie, melatonin is okay?
Yeah.
Right. All right. We've got a question here. Don't have a name. We've got an email. I went in for an endoscopy, and after the procedure, the doctor said my stomach looked very irritated and thought for sure I had an infection.
Oh, okay.
Well, like any other test, I had the results come back negative. I've got severe bloating and pale stools, but no GERD.
Mm-hmm.
What causes a severely irritated stomach?
Okay, can we hold that question over because we divide these podcasts into two parts? Basic question, we'll reiterate, is what causes my stomach irritation?
Mm-hmm.
It's not an infection. Help.
Yeah.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin. This is our weekly Q&A with Layla. We'll be right back with part two.